Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. This is episode 283, and again, we're in sort of the post announcement period, so there's a couple pieces of news here and there, but sort of a little bit of a light news week. But I've got some fun stuff that I found. So hope everyone's doing well. Hope everyone's staying cool. It is quite hot and humid, where I am, like record breaking temperatures and record breaking humidity. And it's like the combination of the two. And it is truly awful. So, hope everyone's staying cool. And that you are getting all sorts of gaming in. So, why don't we get into this week's headlines? So, first up, Final Fantasy, as we talked about last week, we talked about Final Fantasy 16. This week, we're going to talk about Final Fantasy 14. Seems it's so weird in that like Final Fantasy 14 ended up being an MMO. I feel like 12 was an MMO, like was 12 an MMO? I'm not sure, but like because you know, essentially like every other edition, you know, single player experience, so it comes and goes, concrete story. But then like, you know, like 16 just came out. And now, like, there will still be updates like 14. So it's like, oh, everybody's going back to 14. You know, it almost makes me kind of wish that, like, they had titled it something a little similar or something a little different, you know. like, still call it Final Fantasy, but just, like, not do the 14 naming convention or something. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But IGN reports that Square Enix is giving away real versions of the MMO's infamous low-poly grapes as part of the goodie bag at Final Fantasy XIV Fan Festival. That's a lot of Fs. That's you call that F5. So other items include a crossbody bag, a Loporet carrot pen, an anniversary pin, a Grebulov magnet, and an Azem's crystal keychain. But the highlight of this was basically a meme where when one of the expansions came out, like everything looked great, and then all of a sudden, like in the shot, there's like this just low poly, sort of like they took, instead of like figuring out how to sort of trick you into thinking that, you know, this like bunch of grapes was modeled, they kind of just like did a weird like rectangle. And then just sort of threw a grape, like a grape bunch texture on top of it. But they're poking fun at themselves because of that. And they made it an actual thing. Like it's a physical item. So I mean it almost looks like a drink container. So I don't know if that's what it is. That like has a removable top, like that would be pretty smart. yeah, and it has sort of the sort of bunches of grapes texture overlaid on top of it. So that's always fun, you know, when a company sees a meme that was kind of poking fun at it or at a product and sort of leans into it. So yeah. So for anyone who's looking to attend that, be sure to get your low poly grapes. Next up, unusual publication to be reported on, for this podcast, but the Wall Street Journal, noted gaming publication, the Wall Street Journal, reported that the serialized, one out of one ring card has been found. by a Canadian collector based out of Toronto who wishes to remain anonymous. The grading company PSA confirmed in the news via Twitter. So we can all stop searching for it. I mean, there's still other serialized cards in those packs, but like the big one that everybody was going bananas for, like that's been found. It's done. We can all stop worrying about it. You know, and maybe this will help the price of all those cards come down a bit. But we'll see. We will just have to see. Personally, I'm hoping that prices of Nazgul drop. Because sort of like the serialized cards, there are 9 different versions of Nazgul, basically artwork for each of the 9 different ones. But like there, one of them is a card in like the base set or like the base numbering. And then the other 8 are variants that appear in like the variant, numbers in the set. Basically people are, and it's like a very niche card too. Like it's not super great. And it's just the fact that people want to collect all 9 that is driving the price up. But we'll see, you know, maybe now that once all of the fervor over the One Ring has subsided, people will be like, oh, well, I got to make my, you know, I got to get my value back on these cards. And like the secondary market will just get flooded with stuff. So we'll see. Next up, Pokemon Concierge is a stop-motion animated series revolving around a Pokemon resort. It has a cute little teaser up right now. It is coming to Netflix this December. But it's, yeah, revolving around like a person who works at a resort with like a little Psyduck companion. And they just sort of cater to guests at the resort. So we'll see. I mean, it might be like a little slice of life type thing. I do have to say, if like the stop motion work is phenomenal, like it almost to the point that it looks like super fluid. And I know I've seen stop motion artists on YouTube who use stuff that is like, you know, super like use little models and stuff that are super polished, and it gives like a certain look that makes it almost not look real. And you know, it's an art style that I really enjoy. Now it is Netflix, so I don't know. Excuse me. The fact that it's not on. The fact that it's not on like Crunchyroll or something, I don't know if Pokemon's just too big for that. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's something that Netflix paid the Pokemon company for to say like, help please. Since, you know, the subscriber count is still a bit of a sore point for Netflix. So. Next up, Power Watch Simulator. So this is an unusual inclusion for the news, but I have a number of friends who very much enjoy playing Power Watch Simulator. Very relaxing game. I also have a number of streamers that I follow who play it. So Future Lab and Square Enix Collective, I did not realize that this was part of like a Square Enix Collective. They have released a SpongeBob themed DLC pack for this game. Now, for those who might not be aware, what this game is so it is a simulator. So the, you know, it's less of a quote unquote game in that, how to describe it? Like, it's not that you're like racking up points or doing races or you're competing against other people or anything like that. You know, simulator games are more often the experience of replicating a real life task. You know, and maybe there's, you know, little gamified elements to it. So in this case, like for Power Wash Simulator, like you can get rated on how well you do of a job. You know, and they have like particular tasks and areas and levels and stuff. But it's more about just sort of this, I don't know if cathartic is the right word, but very like relaxing, meditative practice of like taking power washing tools and just cleaning things. And that's it. that's the game. SpongeBob themed DLC. So you'll be able to take your tools to Bikini Bottom, and hose down SpongeBob's house. I presume you'll be able to do Patrick's Rock, Squidward's house, probably the Krusty Krab, maybe Sandy's Dome, potentially. And that it's coming to like all platforms. I didn't realize it was out for Switch, but it's even coming to Nintendo Switch. So that's very exciting. Next up, The Verge reports that Elgato, makers of the Stream Deck, not the Steam Deck, the Stream Deck, is looking to open an app store for the Stream Deck later this year to allow developers to sell plugins, modules, and icons. So right now, the way it works is like there's a little section for you to download like plugins that people can give away for free. You know, and they do things like they might have certain functionality or they might hook into certain services, you know, that have like APIs available for hooking into things. Or it might be like certain display functions. You know, in icon packs, like they just take images. So you just load a PNG file and it will load it in there. But this is basically for a way for developers, if they want to then monetize that, to be able to sell them. Now, whether this means that everything that's currently available for free suddenly gets monetized and now nobody uses it, I don't know. I don't know if it makes it more of an incentive to develop things for the Stream Deck. And we start to see like all sorts of wild new uses for it. I don't know. I mean, mine, you know, I don't use it for anything sort of outside of the ordinary. Like I have a couple of little soundboard type things, some scene collections in OBS, you know, a panic button, although Twitch kind of integrated that feature now. So it's not as necessary. I used to have a bunch of, like, Twitch commands hooked in, but, like, they broke, like, years ago. So, for whatever reason, that doesn't work. But, yeah, I mean, it's a tricky thing where, you know, obviously, if people want to develop things and sell them, you know, sure. I mean, you know, it's great that they would be able to. But obviously the concern is if then folks that are giving stuff away for free currently will then pull it and then relist it for some sort of price. You know, and then icons, I mean, yeah, I mean, icon packs are sold, but I mean, if you've got Photoshop and at least some semblance of graphic design, I mean, you can just make your own icons. You just need to know like the file size and the canvas size. Or really any image editing software will do it. But yeah, so when that launches, I'll be curious to see as someone that uses an Elgato Stream Deck, of what sort of that store looks like, or if this might be sort of like an announcement, it launches and then it sort of fails, for lack of adoption. I don't know. We'll have to wait and find out. All right, last up, the Unearthed Arcana. So I talked about it last week that it was going to come out. It is out now. The latest playtest basically redoes all of the base classes. So now it includes class progression for the monk. I think they had pretty much gotten everything else at this point. But capstones, class capstones have returned to level 20. Subclass progression reverts to being different for every class. The only change is now subclasses all start at level 3. And basically a lot of like tweaking of individual abilities and stuff. Particularly for some of the classes that were introduced early on, they did walk back a bunch. And so it's one of those things where I often have a tough time because, you know, my group, we don't meet often enough to get a chance to like really play test out a lot of this stuff. Like it's vastly more difficult to try to do like a public play test for a tabletop role-playing game, than it is for, say, you know, like an MMO, like doing a public beta for an MMO. Just in terms of, it's easier to get feedback, whether it's you know, player-provided feedback or automated feedback in terms of like telemetrics and stuff, or telemetry rather. You know, you're able to just get that data because people aren't constricted to like having to sit down, get a group together, sort of rebuild or build characters to fit this stuff. And granted, this is for, I will add a caveat, this is for something that's more complicated, like Dungeons and Dragons. You know, obviously, if you do a very rules light game, yeah, sure, it's going to be a lot easier to play test that because there's a lot less components to play test. But particularly with D&D, it's difficult because it's like, you know, let's say the period is like 2 months, you know. I mean, if your group meets weekly, that's eight oper you know, you have to kind of say, we're gonna put any existing campaigns on hold or move them to a different day and set aside this day in order to do playtest stuff specifically. Also, with the knowledge of, you know, it's sort of like an early access thing on Steam that we're stuff, it's going to get wiped like every time a new playtest is out, in theory. So, difficult for me to really gauge aside from sort of eyeballing it on paper. But, you know, I think at some point maybe I will do, sort of a full review on its own podcast episode, but I can give some, you know, quick rundown thoughts here. So ultimately, you know, there were some good design changes with the monk, just from a flavor perspective as well as a mechanics perspective. Kind of removes a lot of the mysticism surrounding it, which I know was a complaint from groups of Asian TTRPG designers, and sort of leans into more of, you know, this is from, like, obviously there's some magical element to it, but it's less of, you know, a mystical bent and more of, you know, every class has some element of either super heroics or magic to it. So it allows you to do some stuff and taps into like a reserve of physical energy that you have. So renaming a lot of features or swapping them out for stuff removes a bunch of like ribbon abilities and replaces them with like mechanical benefits. Ranger was sort of a one step forward, you know, or, you know, last playtest was a little bit of like two steps forward, and this is like somewhere between 1 to 3 steps back. Like it might have actually regressed a bit. Seems like they really just want to get Natural Explorer in there. But again, I don't know if they're in sort of the refining phase or if they're still in sort of a, we're just still throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks and what resonates with people. So previous playtest version of the Ranger, you would get like expertise with 2 skills, right? Now they brought it back so that it's you get expertise with 1 skill, and now it's advantage with 2 skills. I think it's nature and survival, with specific terrain types. And you still have to choose them. You can swap them out with a long rest. So that is something, you know, you can at least change them around. However, you know, in my mind, just picking survival for one of your expertise things means, like, if you want to play, like, a ranger that focuses on wilderness survival, like, just do that, and then you get a free expertise in something else. And that basically covers, like, the entirety of Natural Explorer from the base class in the 2014 Player's Handbook. Like, if you just grab expertise in survival, you don't need Natural Explorer. You know, or, you know, there's still, like, the other sort of ribbon benefits, but, like, very niche. And it really depends on your group's play style. Like, much more so. Just because a lot of groups like hand wave travel. You know, and even in groups where, like, you're doing sort of a hex crawl, which, like, a hex crawl sort of exploration style game, which is what rangers are extremely well suited for. There is still some element of, like, the travel rules, quote-unquote, that gets glossed over. Because, like, the base game assumes everybody has a task that they're doing while you are traveling. And if you, you know, are doing that task, you are not remaining alert to ambushes and stuff. So, like, you have to specifically have, like, a scout who is keeping alert. And, like, one of the benefits for that ability for rangers is, for Natural Explorer, is that you can remain alert. But it only functions in that terrain, except that seems like it wouldn't be a terrain-dependent feature. You know, I would love to see Wizards go in a direction of, like, really focusing on terrain, like, making rangers a master of terrain. And not just a specific type of terrain, but just every all-terrain. Make rangers an all-terrain vehicle for interesting mechanics. You know, and doing things like maybe manipulating difficult terrain or cover or, you know, environmental conditions. And just really being able to support the party. Like, kind of, because they really don't have a great identity right now. And it's kind of just sort of, like, elements of druid, elements of fighter, and elements of rogue. And it seemed like they were going in a direction where they wanted to push sort of the expert more, you know, and push it in the rogue direction a bit more with the last playtest. And in this one, they kind of swung it back to, like, we don't really know what we're doing with them. So that it was kind of the extent that I looked through it. I'm gonna take a bigger look over everything, and talk about the playtest in a special sort of one-off episode of the podcast. I said I was gonna do that from now on instead of doing a deep dive segment. So, we'll give it its own episode. That will be outside of the regular sort of numbered, progression, but it'll be on the same feed. So probably be on the lookout for that sometime within the next week. Yeah, that is actually going to wrap up the news for this week. So thank you all for joining me for this episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. If you'd like to help support, I skipped it. If you want to see more content, like other episodes of this podcast, check out my comics, all that stuff. You can go to 8bitadventures.com. That has sort of the master. That has posts for the podcast. It has some links for streams and things like that. Has comics, artwork, all that good stuff. If you would like to support all of those ventures, the best way to do so is to become a patron on patreon.com/8bitadventures. Patrons can show their support for as little as $1 a month, and you get all sorts of benefits. Like you get a thank you on the patrons page on the website. You get access to Discord channels. You get the VOD right there on the feed, as well as some comic related benefits as well. Always looking to try and figure out some decent benefits for patrons. So one of the other benefits is you can suggest topics for the show. You can message me on there and suggest topics that come up during the week. So big shout out and thank you to all of my current patrons. Thank you for your continued support. And lastly, the opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. And with that, that wraps things up for this week, folks. So, as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.